I believe every one of us has the power to create the life of our dreams by tapping into the infinite part of ourselves. When we do this, we live our lives in a state of ease and flow, full of peace, purpose, and prosperity. And that's why I wanted to create a show called Becoming Infinite. Becoming Infinite is for the seekers, the dreamers, and the creators who know there is something more, who desire growth and ways to live a more soul-centered, purposeful life, who want to activate the divine within and be the masters of their destinies, who feel that life can and should be magical. It's about spirituality, creativity, and heart-centered business. It's about connecting to our highest selves and living lives full of meaning and purpose that feel abundant and free. That is what we all desire. So each week, I will dig deep, sometimes with guests, sometimes solo, to uncover tools and practices, rituals and routines that you can use to become infinite. My name is Cooper Gillespie, and I'm so glad you're here. Welcome. Hey, 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 everybody. Oh, man, I'm so glad to be here. I had a great week with my parents. I swear, I should have them on the show because they have such an interesting and I think pretty awesome relationship. They've been divorced for multiple decades, and yet they've been able to, and it wasn't always this way, I got to say. There was a time when it wasn't always this way, but they've been able to sort of put aside all the BS that, you know, happened in their marriage and really focus on their friendship, which has just been awesome for the kids. You know, it really took away a lot of the strife that I see some other divorced families go through. You know, like I've never heard my parents really say anything disparaging about the other one. Certainly there's been things that maybe they didn't necessarily like that the other person did, but they never blamed things on each other or made us take sides. And I just think that is so the way to go in divorce. If you can manage it, it really is good for the kids. At least it's been good for us. All right. So I promised that I would discuss Costa Rica and what that trip was really all about. And it was really about healing, about processing, and about letting go of our fertility journey. So let me back up. Let me start at the beginning, and then we'll get to Costa Rica. So you all probably know I spent my 20s rocking and rolling through this world. I was in a band. It was awesome. That was pretty much my sole focus, was playing music, touring, recording music. If I had to work a job here and there to make that happen, I would do it. Sometimes music paid the bills, but it was music, music, music. I was also in a relationship, which I didn't really feel I could have children in, but to be quite honest, it didn't really matter to me because I didn't even know if I really wanted kids. I was pretty ambivalent about it. Like, my sister has been dreaming about having babies since she was a baby. Like, we used to take her to Walmart back in Missouri, and she'd toddle through the aisles as a little baby and go right to the baby section and be like, babies, you know, she just always wanted to have them. And that was not me at all. I was always unsure. I think part of that was because I didn't have the happiest childhood. I would say definitely my teen years were really challenging. I got a stepmom around that time, and our family dynamic was just really, I would say it was really messed up. It wasn't good. And I remember sitting there thinking, you know, I don't think I could ever have kids because I wouldn't know how to not mess them up. I would not know how to not screw them up because I feel really screwed up from this experience I'm having as a kid. And I don't know how to not do that to somebody else. And so it's probably better if I just don't even try. I remember thinking that. And so for a long time, I kind of thought, you know, I'm not going to have kids and that'll be okay. And then it's funny. My grandma says, you know, every 10 years you get a new life. And she lived to be, I think, 94 or something like that. And it's really true. It's like, wow, every 10 years, I feel like I've gone through some big transformation. And certainly when my 30s happened, everything changed. So my first marriage ended and I met my now husband, Greg. And we dated for a long time. It was both of our, it would have been both of our second marriages, right? And so we just weren't eager to, you know, hop on the marriage train again. I think sometimes you're a little more cautious that second time. At least we were, because we knew what was at stake. So we didn't actually get married until I was 36. And I remember about that time, I feel like I found the person. I felt like I had done a lot of self-work, and I knew how I could have kids, and it could be really positive. It could be really awesome. I thought I could be a pretty kick-ass mom, and I would really like to have kids with Greg. You know, that would be so cool. Have little Cooper Gregs, right? Or Greg Coopers, whatever. And so I think Greg was a little more ambivalent about it, having, because, you know, he had kids. They were about 7 and 10 when I met them. And I think, you know, there's that feeling like, do I want to start all over again in my late 30s? You know, I get that. But he loves me. So he was willing to try and see what happened. And so we did. We tried, you know. I guess I wouldn't say like we were trying really hard, but we were not trying for a while. And then when nothing happened after like a year or so, we're like, oh, maybe we should really try. So then we were consciously trying and still nothing was happening. And it's really weird. It was really weird for me because literally every single woman in my family gets pregnant like that. You know, like they all have 4 kids and have kids into their 40s. And I mean, it doesn't seem to be an issue for anyone in my family. Both my mom and my grandma had kids in their early to mid 40s, but it just wasn't happening for me. And so, gosh, how did this all begin? So I think I remember there was a fertility app where you can track like your fertility. And I had been using it for some time, and they had this cost sharing program for fertility treatments, because if you've never known anyone who's gone through infertility or you yourself haven't done it, maybe you don't know, but it's really, really freaking expensive. Not that it's not worth it, but it's a lot of money. And so they had this cost sharing thing. And I remember I called and I scheduled an appointment, and I talked with, the head of that program for the app. And I remember I said my age. And by this point I was like, maybe I was 38. And I just remember hearing this like, after I said my age on the other end of the line. And, I sometimes think that people who work in fertility don't understand how much courage it takes to put yourself out there, to make that call. Cause there's a lot of shame around, you know, being infertile, and it's a really lonely journey, and you feel like you can't talk to anybody about it for a lot of reasons. And I just remember being like, wow. And then she told me that they didn't have a cost sharing program in my, you know, where I lived. And that was sad, you know? So then I went to see a couple of fertility doctors and have consultations, and, you know, for pretty much everyone, I was over the hill at that point. So it was, the attitude was very much like, wow, you're really old to be trying this, which now from where I'm at, I'm like, oh my God, I was so young. Why didn't they just like start me on IVF right there? I have no idea. So I feel like in the fertility, I feel like a lot of the time, the way fertility doctors, I know that they have to be realistic, or at least they can't make false promises, right? Because for a lot of reasons, I mean, they probably don't want to get sued for saying, yeah, no, I can get you pregnant. But at the same time, from a coaching perspective, from myself as a coach, no client that you have will ever achieve their desired result if you don't also believe it's possible for them, right? Like, and they can have a really crazy dream, and you have to get yourself there to believe it with them, because if you don't, it just won't happen. You have to believe that it's possible for your client. And I felt like at every turn, every doctor basically didn't believe that it was possible for me. And the crazy thing is, every single one of them would be like, I don't know what the problem is. Like, you have a lot of eggs. Greg has great sperm. Like, I don't know why you're not getting, it's just unexplained infertility. So it's not like there was like some physical thing that was in the way. There was no explanation, except for at this point I was older. But so we decided to try IUI. And I remember the first time we tried it. So I went in for, you know, because you have to take this medicine to like make your eggs grow and everything. And when I went in, they do an ultrasound to see how everything's going, to see when they're going to trigger the eggs and inseminate you. And the woman was like, she did the ultrasound and she kind of had got this look on her face. And she was like, you made too many eggs. I think I had made like 6 eggs. She's like, you made too many. I think we need to stop this cycle because there's a chance of getting multiples. And, so what do you want to do? Do you want to quit? I mean, I think we should abandon the cycle. And I was like, I don't know. Like, you're the doctor. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, and it almost felt like, I'm sure it wasn't this, but it almost felt like her face was really big in front of my face. And she was like yelling in my face, like, what do you want to do? Do you want to man this cycle? We got to do it. And you don't want to have multiples and blah, blah, blah. I was like, I don't care. I'll take what I can get at this point. But anyway, so I said, okay, I guess we should abandon it. And then like, I totally basically fainted. I had a total vagovascular reaction because it was so intense and very stressful. So after that experience, I was like, I don't think that person's the right fertility doctor for me. And we decided to do IUI first because, of course, it's a lot cheaper than IVF. But knowing what I know now, I don't necessarily think that that was the right way to go because we wasted a lot of time with a procedure that isn't as effective as IVF. It might have been worth it just to go straight to that. But no one really explained that. They were like, you're getting older, but yeah, try IUI first. And the thing is like insurance doesn't cover this stuff. So it just gets wildly expensive. Anyway, so then we tried IUI a couple more times. It didn't work. The last IUI that I tried was it was March 11th, 2020, right before the whole world closed. I remember my doctor just being like, listen, after this, like we're closing down, there's no more fertility treatments. And after this, like you're going to be too old for IUI. We won't do it on someone your age. So you're going to have to go to IVF, but that we don't do that. So you'll have to find another doctor. And I don't know when things are going to open back up, but, yeah, I guess we're done here. And it was like, shit, like, damn, I wish I wouldn't have wasted that time, you know, but whatever. You coulda, woulda, shoulda, you know. So as the world, you know, felt like it was getting used to the pandemic and things were starting to open up, I checked and the doctor that my other doctor had recommended me to was accepting clients. And so we decided, okay, this is it. We're going to try IVF. And let me just tell you, IVF is no small commitment. I mean, I didn't even know how big of a commitment it was. I'm just talking financially here. It's $20,000 to $30,000, depending on how much you pay for your medications, which just seems wrong. It seems wrong that that is not covered that by insurance. It should be covered. It's a woman's reproductive issue. And the fact that the families have to spend that much money to try to get pregnant is just wrong, in my opinion. It speaks to huge class inequality when it comes to fertility issues, because not many people can afford 30 grand a pop to try to get pregnant. But so we, you know, I feel very fortunate. We had some money that we could do this with. We went into it like, okay, we're going to try this one time. And holy, holy smokes. Wow. We did not know what we were in for. And I remember on the consultation with the doctor, he's like, well, I'm looking at everything. Everything looks fine between the two of you. What do you think's going on here? And we're like, I don't know. That's why we're here to see you. Like, if we knew, we would have fixed this situation. We don't know. And the doctor did say, yeah, your chances are low and blah, 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 blah. But I really want to do it. I'd like to help you guys. And so we did it. So IVF, if you don't know someone who's gone through it, is basically like, You have to get so many shots. You get so many shots. Like my stomach was completely bruised by the end. My butt was bruised at the end. After you do your egg transfer, they give you like it's a shot of progesterone, which is like an oil hormone. And so they give it to you with like a 1.5-inch needle, and you have to stick it all the way into your hip in this certain spot because you don't want to hit a nerve on either side. So an inch and a half of this big ass needle into your hip, and then inject this like oil into you, which oil obviously is not going to go into your body as easily as a water soluble type of substance. Oh my God. It was so brutal. So brutal. And my husband was such a trooper. I mean, he was on it giving me shots like every single night. I don't even know how he did it, because I don't think I could have given myself all those shots. I know I couldn't have given myself the progesterone shots. Like those were so gnarly. But hot tip, if you are going through IVF, we got the progesterone shots down. You warm up the needle, you warm up the syringe under your arm, and then warm up your like hip with a heating pad before you shoot it in. Then you shoot it in, and then afterwards rub it with a tennis ball. And I tell you what, that was the magic right there. But so anyway, we did the egg transfer. And I remember, and this is after weeks of like, you know, I think it was like 3 shots a day in my stomach. It was so many shots. So the day comes when they take the eggs out of your ovaries. And that was, they put you under and everything to do it. And then a couple of days later, they do the egg transfer, where after they've sort of created the embryos in the petri dish, they put them back inside of you to see if they will take. And I remember my doctor was like, these embryos don't look good, but this is their best chance for survival. I was like, damn, that is not what I need to hear right now. But the coolest thing was, oh my gosh. So when they put them back up into your uterus through a catheter, you can watch on screen as they do it. And the embryos look like little white balls of light. And so we had 3 embryos and they put them, you know, it was like so cool. And I had a lot of hope. I had a lot of hope. I really did. I was doing my visualizations. I could see my baby. I could see what my baby would, I could see her. Like I knew she was out there. And, you know, I had names picked out, like, oh, this would be a cool name, you know? And then I'm sorry. It's just like, wow, I can't believe I'm still so emotional about this, but. And then none of them took. None of those little beads of light took. IVF can feel very much like gambling. Like at that point, I was totally like out of my mind because, like I said, it's so brutal physically and mentally in every way. Like you're just so, you know, you got hormones coursing through your body and you're hoping so bad and you're, you know, it's just, you feel like you're losing your mind. At least I did. And, I was like, oh, I was gung-ho to go again. And Greg's like, how far are we going to go with this? How far are we going to go with this? Are we going to burn our house down? You know, are we going to sell everything we own to just keep doing this until we get pregnant? And at that point I was like, yeah, let's burn it all down. Like I'm committed. Like I, you know, I want this bad. Like we'll do it. You know, we'll sell the house, take the money and just throw it at IVF. Right. And then through some, you know, meditation and a lot of self-work, I realized like, no, I'm not going to blow my whole financial life up for this. I'm not. It was really tempting though. And, when that day when I went into the doctor to find out if it had worked or not, it did feel so much like gambling. It's kind of like Vegas. It's like, oh, you know, because it's always like that feeling like, oh, the next time could work, you know. And I remember walking in and the ladies behind the desk were like, you checked, didn't you? You checked to see if you know, with a home test. And I was like, no, I didn't. And they were like, yes, you did. Come on. And they were all cheering and everything. It felt like kind of like being at a craps table. And, they did the blood draw. Oh, that's the other thing. So many blood draws. Oh my God. There was a lot of needles involved and I do not like needles. So it's like, oh, it was so brutal. And then we got the call that it didn't work. And I mean, I don't know. This is the weird part about manifestation for me, because I feel like you can, you know, you can do all the manifestation work. You really can. Like getting in the right vibe, visualizing, you know, I saw that little girl. I could almost touch her. I knew she was my baby, you know, and then you still don't get what you want. And I mean, I think I'm a pretty darn good manifester. Like I'm pretty legit at it at this point in my life. And that's why I think that there's this X factor that can't be explained in manifestation, right? There's this X factor. I don't know if it's God or what it is, but you can do all the things, you can do all the manifestation practices, and you may still not get what you want. And it has nothing to do with your vibe or, you know, what you were thinking or your visualizations, or there's an X factor out there that goes, nope, this is not for you right now. And we don't know why. And then, you know, years down the line, I mean, there's been a lot of things that I haven't gotten in life that I've been in the process of manifesting and you don't get them. And then later you're like, oh my gosh, that was the best thing ever that I did not get that thing. Right. And so I do think there's this X factor in manifestation. And that's what it was in this case. For some reason, God or source or whatever has different plans for me. And I have to be okay with that. And it's not that I couldn't have gone through. I could not physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, or financially ever go through IVF again. Hell no. That was so hard. And if you know anyone who's going through it, like, tell them that they're amazing because it's really hard. So why am I sharing all this with you anyway? Why am I like, you know, I don't know. I feel stupid crying on my own podcast, but because it was so lonely. It was so lonely. There was no one to talk to about it. And no one really can understand. And so if there's one person out there who hears this, who is going through infertility, and this gives them some sort of feeling like they're not alone, then boom, did my job. And if any woman out there ever wants to DM me or needs to talk, I'm here for you. I'll just listen. But so even a couple of weeks later, like they say that you're supposed to have fully recovered from the egg retrieval pretty quickly, actually. But my ovaries still felt like I'd been punched in the ovaries. Like they still actually feel bruised. And it's been a couple months. They felt bad. Like I've always been a side sleeper to this day. Like right now, I can't lie on my side because they hurt so bad. So I actually went back to my doctor because I was still having this pain. And he's like, well, have you gained weight? Because they look fine to me. In fact, they look so good. I'd like to try again. And I'm like, I bet you would with my $30,000. And also, yeah. Oh yeah. I've gained weight. Hello. It's a pandemic. And I just went through fertility treatments. Like, is that why my ovaries still hurt? I don't know. Anyway, I'm still dealing with it. Basically, physically, I still don't feel right. I'll tell you what's gotten me through it are my practices, meditation, breath work. Oh my God. Without those two things, I don't know how I could have gotten through this because it's impossible almost to feel calm. And those things just really helped calm me and center me when I was going through it. It was really hard. And if you know somebody who's going through fertility treatments, I would say like, I know so many people want to offer advice or offer opinions, but I would say don't. Please don't. If you know someone who's going through this, just ask them what they need. Ask them how you can support them. That's the best, most kind thing you can do. Please don't mention that they can just adopt or foster a child. They know that. Adoption and fostering are great options, but they're not cures for infertility. They're cures for childlessness. But what we're dealing with here is something beyond that. It's infertility, and we have to come to grips with that. So please do not remind us that we can adopt or foster. We know. Please don't tell us about how easy it was for you to get pregnant. That makes us feel like shit. Please don't say, you know, something about it's up to God or whatever. Like, it's just not helpful. It's just not helpful. Please don't tell us that we just need to relax and then we'll get pregnant. That's bullshit. And also, it's almost impossible to physically relax when you're putting your body through fertility treatments. It's like some form of medieval torture. The only actual thing that you should say to someone who's dealing with infertility is, what can I do to support you? How can I support you? That's the best thing you can do. So we, you know, when it became apparent that we were going to stop trying, I told Greg, well, then I want to be that fun couple who goes in fun places and does fun stuff, that fun older couple, you know, like if we're going to end this journey and I'm going to come to terms with infertility, then we need to go on a trip. So that's what we did. We went to Costa Rica. And to be quite honest, it was a beautiful way to heal. I really felt connected to the earth and it was a beautiful place. So that was very healing. And we were able to just be together in quiet ways, which was very healing. There was a lot healing about it. And I know I got emotional talking about this. Of course, it's a grief. It's a grief and a sadness that I don't know that will, I don't know. I don't know if it'll ever all the way go away, but actually, believe it or not, I really am doing okay. Like I've surrendered, I've surrendered and I've accepted and moving forward, in positivity and light and gratitude. I mean, there was a lot to be grateful for in this experience, even though it was brutal. I think I've said that like 5 times now, but even though it was really brutal, I had some incredible friends who supported me. My husband who supported me in every way and gave me all those terrible shots. And, you know, I learned that I can get through something like that. It was not easy. And then my spiritual practices, I have to say, they were everything. So I don't know. I didn't plan anything here. Maybe I should have written this all out so it really flowed more coherently. But I felt like I just had to speak from my heart. And so that's what we went to Costa Rica for, was to sort of heal and regroup from that experience and find a way to move forward. And we did that. And it's okay. It's okay. We're okay. And life is good, man. Life is really freaking good. Thinking about it now, I mean, you know, I also have to say I'm really grateful for the experience of being a stepmom, because obviously it's nothing like being a mom, but my stepkids are awesome and I have had children in my life and I'm grateful for that. And I will say, you know, when thinking about having kids or not having kids, I mean, something's going to be lost either way, right? Like, you know, maybe if you have kids, you don't get to do some of the things you wanted to do. And if you don't have kids, you don't get to have kids. So there's a loss either way, and either way is going to be okay. It's going to be okay because there's a lot gained either way too. And we're definitely planning our next trip. That's going to be our thing. Traveling fun couple. That's what I said. I said, we're going to be the traveling fun couple. That's what we're doing. So Greg's on board for that. All right. I love you all. Thanks for listening to me. I'm so grateful for you. Grateful that we get to connect here. And you can always reach out to me. I'm on my website, coopergillespie.com, on my Instagram, @coopergillespie. If you like this show, please subscribe and leave us a 5-star review. And I'm going to leave you with a song of mine. Until next time.
These are not the greatest disappointments I'll know. I know, I know. Tired in the shower feels good to be home. I know, I know. You're like the glass on the shower wall. I know, I know. You catch the light so pretty, it's hard to see the stone. Yeah. today. No.